Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of Deadite Bites, the No Ship Network podcast on the Starz television series Ash vs. Evil Dead. I'm your host, Steve.
And I am your host, Em. All right, tonight we are discussing Ash vs. Evil Dead, Tales from the Rift, Episode 6. This episode was directed by Regan Hall. He has also directed a film called Fast Girls and a short called titled 3 Hours. And this episode was written by Aaron Lamb, and he's actually a former co-producer of Spartacus. Any thoughts on this episode before we get into it?
It was necessary. The stuff that happened was sad, but necessary. Everything that happened between Ruby and Kelly, I kind of knew what was going to happen whenever she got there and she didn't have a backup plan up her sleeve.
Yeah.
Her surprise was the Kandarian dagger. And it was like, that's all you got? Shit.
It was telegraphed. And it was like torture watching it.
Mm-hmm. So I almost felt like they were saying, yeah, we have to have her possessed by the spirit of Kaya. And this is the way that we're going to do it. And you probably already guessed it, but we're going to have it be done in this. We're going to take advantage of that and have a really great fight between these two staple characters of the show.
And it was a really great fight. You ready to get into it?
Let's do it.
Last episode left us with Ash and Brandy speeding away from Ruby and the law, and Kelly advancing towards her eventual confrontation with Ruby. This episode opens with us back at Ruby's, and we see her progeny, now in a grisly chrysalis, and it's close to maturation. I love when Ruby exits the nursery. You see her through the shotgun blast hole as she passes through the door. I thought that it was a nice touch aesthetically, because it won't be long before we will see through her head in a similar fashion.
The callbacks that they do in the show are flat out amazing. Mm-hmm. The way they keep bringing things back around. And they do a major, major one a little later on that got me super excited, but we'll get to that.
Huh.
It's not so much a callback as it was a scene from the end of Evil Dead 2.
Okay.
That lets you know that...
Oh, the rift.
The rift, that something did happen that we've all been speculating on whether or not it did or didn't, so on and so forth.
Kelly confronts Ruby almost immediately after the exit from the nursery. Kelly counts down her grievances against Ruby with her shotgun. The point-blank blast to Ruby's face transitions satisfyingly into the title credit sequence.
So you had stated before that there was another title credit sequence a couple episodes ago that you said was your favorite. Does this overtake that?
This is cool, but I still like Pablo going through the windshield a lot more.
Yeah, I kind of have to go with you on that. Pablo going through the windshield is more badass than this, because it's just a better crafted scene. There's more ingenuity to it and awesomeness to it. This was just brutal. And I liked it a lot, but the Pablo scene wins. It ekes it out.
I also thought Dana De Lorenzo's delivery of "this is for me" was great.
Agreed. Everything she said in this scene when she's... Man, this is Kelly's episode to me. I hope that she has another episode where she does just as good or better, and I think she will. I really do think she will. But this one was really fun to watch.
So afterwards, Ruby tells Kelly to shoot her all she wants because she is immortal. In answer to this, Kelly reveals the Kandarian dagger. Kelly attacks and then is able to press the dagger to Ruby's neck, inflicting burns. And she asks Ruby, basically, do you feel it burning or whatever, which I thought was a later kind of a call back to that when Ruby asks her if it hurts when she's stabbed by that dagger.
Yeah, it is.
Ruby jeeringly says that Kelly is not worthy. She then launches Kelly bodily across the room and warns her to not start a fight she can't finish. Kelly is unrelenting.
Kelly's actually the worthiest foe outside of Ash and Pablo that Ruby's ever had to fight. So I don't want to hear that shit.
That. I think Ruby believes that on some level, but it's almost like she knows otherwise. Mm. Like she's got some sort of hint of her fate.
Damn. So by her saying you're not worthy, that means that would be something bad. Like there's some sort of something in Kelly that makes her not a worthy opponent.
But her own fate, not Kelly's.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought you were saying that in reference to Kelly, like why she said that to Kelly. Okay. All right.
I don't know. I mean, she just has a low opinion of humans, most likely.
She could. It just could also be an extrapolation of the Deadite taunting style, how they try to attack you at that point where you're the weakest, because Kelly is worthy and she's full of honor and vengeance in this instant, and she's being told that she's not worthy. So
yeah, she's definitely worthy by our standards. So now we're with Ash and Brandy, and they arrive back to his home frantic due to their escape from the local authorities. Ash closes the blinds while Brandy voices her incredulity regarding her current Deadite fighting circumstances. Ash compliments her ability to drive a Celta and is further thrilled with her knowing how to handle it when the ass end skids. He says what he has been thinking, like daughter, like dad. He grabs two beers and she grabs two Pop-Tarts. Now everything is ironed out between them. In her mind, though, she needs to ask him about the kid and his car.
So this scene generates my Metal Mike quote of the week, which is when she gives him a Pop-Tart fresh out of the toaster. And he's like, oh my God, this is so much better toasted. So this idiot has been eating Pop-Tarts straight out of the package, not toasting them or anything for the whole time. Which they're not. Some flavors of Pop-Tarts, to be fair, are not bad that way. But to never have toasted them before? Come on.
Could he not be bothered with it or something? Is it just too much work?
Maybe he just thought it was something that, you know, these fancy highfalutin people do who are putting on airs with their pinkies up. Oh, you toast your Pop-Tarts, do you?
She tells Ash that Previtt has been nothing but kind to her and that stern father voice does nothing to change that. So you must give it to Brandy. She needs to see things for herself, even though she's been seeing a lot, but whatever.
Yeah, it's part of the story. It's part of the plot that has to happen. She has to stay stubborn up until at least through this next upcoming episode. If you guys watch the preview for episode 7, then you'll see what we're talking about. But at least until then, too much further than that, we're going to start approaching the end of the season. So it's going to kind of be like, are we getting on board this bus at some point or not? But yeah, she's staying stubborn and it's kind of like, eh.
Brandy sees that she is covered in demon blood and leaves to go clean up. A knock at the door introduces new characters, a group of Knights of Samaria led by a woman named Zoe. Zoe sees Ash's weapon and they bow in reverence. Ash asks if they get discounts on knee pads. And because of the Knight of Samaria connection, Ash reports that he heard Dalton has bought a one-way ticket to Demonsville, which prompts Zoe to ask after Gary, and Ash reveals that he is dead and that he left a bunch of ancient scribbles on his cellar wall. He pulls the missing Necronomicon pages out from under some household detritus.
There's probably some empty Schempf cans and Pop-Tart wrappers and
peanut shells or something.
Peanut shells, yeah, bullcrap.
Zoe proclaims that if Ash were to show them these writings in the cellar, they will be able to stop evil once and for all. Ash is in disbelief in so many words. Zoe swears that they're not yanking his crank, and Ash says, you better not be, because my daughter is on evil shortlist, and she's the best cook this house ever had. All because of a toasted Pop-Tart.
So I wanted to ask you what you think of this concept of the Knights of Samaria in general.
What do I think of the concept?
As it relates to the story, like how it's being put into the story. I actually like it a good bit.
Why?
Well, for two reasons. The first reason being that it's a good vehicle to give us some decent backstory about characters outside of Ruby and Ash, but who have...
And expendable bodies.
Exactly. That's the second one, too, is that we have expendable bodies for really cool demon scenes or zombie scenes, however you want to look at it, that don't have to be immediate family members or innocent bystanders. And so you get these people kind of in the picture for a few minutes. You don't really get to get familiar with them, but you, well, I guess familiarity would be the right term for it, but you don't get to be sympathetic with them. You're not like on their team or anything. You don't like them, but you get to see them turn into the demon. So it's providing the fodder and it's providing backstory. And I think it was a brilliant move on the writer's parts to do this.
It's almost like they're setting up a bigger story that they can create a spinoff with or pass the baton onto, even.
Right.
Because it reminds me of Torchwood from Doctor Who.
I would watch, as long as it was produced by Tappert, I would, you know, and had Raimi around, I would watch a series that had something to, well, let's just be honest. I would watch anything that has to do with Evil Dead until it got to, like, just super sucky, you know, time, which I don't ever know if it would even get that way, because this show is hands down great and it still feels like this is going to be the last season for as far as what we know in the real world.
And that's how Xena started. She was a character first on Hercules and then had her own show after that.
Lucy Flawless pulling it out.
Now back with Ruby and Kelly, their fighting is in full swing and dirty, with a chair kicked into shatters, turned projectiles, dagger slices, and kidney punches. Kelly, being the deliverer of all these varied attacks, seems up to the task at hand. Until Ruby calmly steps back from Kelly, telling her, big mistake coming here alone. I believe Ruby as she spoke these words, because she was breathing evenly. But Kelly is not going to let anyone else die on her watch. And she's been waiting for this for a long time.
I was hoping for, once we got to the halfway point of the fight, I knew exactly what was going to happen. But at the beginning of the fight, I suspected what was going to happen, but was hoping against hope that, you know, a quote like that would come out. Like, why did you come here by yourself? That was stupid. And then Pablo comes out from behind the shadows somewhere and she's like, oh, she's not by herself. And, you know, yeah. Starts doing something crazy. He has the real Kandarian dagger or something like that. You know, this one was a fake one. But then again, it wouldn't have been able to sizzle her earlier. So
Ruby, now game, wants to see what Kelly's got. The tide turns for Kelly immediately with an elbow clock to her face. And then she is thrown bodily into the bricked fireplace. At this point, shit is dire. It's like she is taking on the Terminator.
Did you catch the Kill Bill reference? Did you really think it'd be that easy?
I did not make that connection, but you are right about that.
Instead of Kelly saying, yeah, I kind of did, she was like, did you think it would be that easy? She's throwing it straight back in her face. I think this is going to come back around. And whenever Kelly gets her eventual revenge on Ruby, there's going to be a revisiting of these couple of lines of dialogue. That's my prediction.
I like the editing when she got clocked in the face by Ruby's elbow. Oh. Had the up close shot and she's like, fuck!
Yeah, that has to hurt. A super strength demon woman, witch, whatever you want to call her, hitting you. Oh my God.
Once again, great acting from Dana DeLorenzo, and also loosely flawless, because, man, she's definitely putting off the Terminator vibes there. When Ruby curb stomps Kelly's ankle, cracking it out of joint and splintering bone, one just can't simply imagine how this could turn around for Kelly.
Yeah, you had to know she was screwed then.
Ruby again throws her bodily across the room. The impact of Kelly's landing against the door jamb ejects the Kandarian dagger out of her grasp and far from her reach. It now lays behind her in the adjacent room. Ruby strides over to obtain the dagger while ridiculing Kelly's terrible attempt at trying to kill her, all guns blazing. I love Kelly flipping her off in response. Ruby brings up Kelly's little knight friend to hurt Kelly some more. And again, something I loved about Kelly, she says his name was Dalton.
Stick it to her.
Kelly still has more to serve up. She tosses a hand grenade into the room Ruby is standing in while she takes cover against the wall.
That was unexpected. When I saw that, I thought maybe the tide was going to be able to turn back into Kelly's favor and she was going to capitalize off that somehow. But with a cleanly broken ankle, she wasn't going to be able to do too much. And then plus, not to interject too much reality into it, but if you set off a grenade and you're in the same vicinity, you might not suffer that same bodily harm because you're in the adjacent room, as you said, but you're going to be shell-shocked by that. You know, you're not going to be able to hear anything or maybe not even see anything for a few moments.
Well, this scene, all these fight scenes between the two of these characters was well orchestrated because I thought they masterfully toyed with me at any rate, because just when I thought Kelly was down, you know, she'd pull that grenade out. I don't think I've seen any grenades around them. Maybe since season one, when they came across that camp in the woods. So that was the militia in the woods, I should say.
Yeah. I'm going to take you back and get you pregnant, Hillary. What would your sister think about that?
Yeah, good memory for that.
Oh, yeah. I'm thinking she got this from Dalton. Whatever dalliances with Dalton that Kelly had added up to some training. Because, I mean, she was fighting like a professional there. And Ruby got the better of her because she's 10 times stronger and it's supernatural. But that's really the only reason, because her fighting wasn't necessarily flawed. So she had been doing some training.
In the Delta, Ash and the Knights of Cimmeria talk about Ruby and the Knights of Cimmeria's mission to find the prophesized one. The prophesized one should have the Necronomicon, and only together will evil be able to be banished.
So the Knights of Cimmeria get a good look at who they're kind of hero worshiping and who they're there to protect and help in the fight against evil. There's got to be a little bit of disappointment. He's lighting up a joint. He doesn't have the book. He's telling them to chill out, grab a couple of beers. Let's get wasted. It's no big deal, right? You know, I've been doing this forever and ever. It's hard for Ash to put himself in the shoes of other people who are also trying to take down this evil, because he only knows how to do it his way, which is just prophesized one aura of blind luck and lucky strikes.
Well, you know, some things are mentioned in this ride that are of importance, where Marcus in the back seat, who's played by Colin Moy, who is in the season where the Damned Spartacus as one of the senators, he brings up how there still is a chance, even though Ash does not have the Necronomicon, because Ash eventually reveals that he doesn't have it. Maybe the writings will lead them to the Deadlands. And I think that's the first utterance of the Deadlands is in that car.
Mm. So that's what they call it then.
That's what they call it. And Zoe informs Ash that's where the Dark Ones have been imprisoned.
So the Deadlands is not the place where Ash went at Army of Darkness. That was just back in time. The Deadlands is, and I mentioned that because this is actually referenced in this episode, finally. The Deadlands are going to be probably where Brandy's musician friend is and all of the other people who are killed by Deadites at some point. This is where the souls get swallowed, I would imagine, if you get too close to the Dark Ones.
So maybe it's not really a poop chute, but an esophagus.
A shitty esophagus?
Yeah, I mean, we know that she's on the other side of that because the first time he encountered that cellar wall, he saw Rachel on the other side.
Right. And so that means that Kelly's probably there now.
Yes. And she's pissed about it.
If she has corporeal form there, somebody better watch out. That's all I'm saying.
Finally, we see Pablo for the first time this episode, and he is looking through a box that once stored grape-flavored Faygo.
2 liter bottles of.
So this is a box that has inheritance from his uncle. Even the naked lady mask is within it. And a box full of Trojan condoms.
Yeah, condoms are a thing with the mentors in Pablo's life. They're just all around. These guys are all, you know, getting some action, and he's not. So
practicing safe sex. It's good.
That's good. I'm not knocking it. I'm just saying, you know, it's probably frustrating for him. He's just like, geez, you know, uncle, el jefe, you know, what am I doing here? What am I doing wrong?
Brandy exits the house looking for her dad. She finds Pablo in the Airstream and asks after his health and if he has seen Ash. Once it is determined that Ash is not on a beer run, Pablo uses his newfound powers to divine where Ash is located and that Ash may be in trouble. He tells Brandy to wait there while he goes to aid Ash.
So I'm kind of waiting for Brandy to get a little bit of her own agency and actualization in the story, because she keeps it. It feels like the theme for the past couple of episodes is to just, okay, you stay put while this happens and then go over here and be safe or hang out with your dad or whatever. So, I mean, you can't expect her to be a ghost beater like everybody else. She doesn't have the anger like Kelly does, even though her mom is gone. She doesn't have that kind of skill and ability to just go kick ass on evil. She's not a junior brujo or especial in the making. She's not the prophesized one. She's the daughter of the prophesized one. So that might, you know, help
out. Well, she's a kid. So, you know, they're not actually going to ask her to help them in that way.
But they're going to have to eventually.
They are going to have to. Yep. Descending into Ash's cellar, Ash warns the Knights of Sumeria to watch their steps and shows them Gary's remains. Zoe examines the Sumerian writing on the wall and thinks that it will open a rift. This causes Ash to recall his previous experiences with rifts.
So this was an awesome moment for me to see this little bit of the very end of Evil Dead 2 Dead by Dawn, where Ash goes through his own rift, or at least a wormhole-like thing, because they resemble each other. The one that he went through looks more like an actual tunnel. This other rift that's in the cellar looks more nebulous. But we had been told by anywhere that you read anything about it, people were like, okay, well, just don't worry about Army of Darkness because we're just not really going to go there, you know, and there's not going to be any references to it. We don't have the rights to that movie, so we can't incorporate that in the storylines. But this is just, you said, well, we don't have to go that far. We own the rights to Evil Dead 2. So here's a scene from that that lets you know, every fan knows what happened there. So I'm glad that they did that and that it's acknowledged that it happened.
Yeah, they're bypassing it and at the same time expanding it. I mean, we had established earlier with the Brujo that you can actually even create like a space within these in-between worlds also. So it's almost like Swiss cheese universe, which has been often used to describe other sci-fi shows like Stranger Things. Zoe tells Ash that the rifts he has encountered before are not like this one. This rift is a mystic one and it links the human sphere with the Deadlands. Marcus says, whatever comes next, I promise Gary's death will not be in vain. And Ash says, my Metal Mike quote of the week. And he says, oh, Power Ranger, tone it down, man. Nobody's even watching.
Power Ranger.
Zoe explains to Ash that if Gary did find the rift, Ash will be able to lead them into the Deadlands and embark on an internal battle against evil. I'm with Ash here. Why would anyone be down to fight an internal battle at any age?
Yeah, that just doesn't sound like a good time. If you were immortal, that might be some sort of proposition. But not being that, I mean, when do you stop to eat and sleep
The way she talks about everything, you can tell her she's uninitiated.
Well, she got initiated today.
She did. She got full on baptized with black deadite blood.
Ugh.
Pablo arrives and guns are pulled on him. Ash tells everyone that Pablo is his trusty sidekick, so everyone calms down. Ash hilariously says to Pablo that he thinks these Knights of Cimmerians flunk Cimmerian 101, and that is when Pablo notices the cellar wall and recognizes the importance of that Cimmerian writing, saying, oh shit.
He knows. He knows what's up. Between his newfound Brujo power and what was written on his own skin, he knows what's up.
Yeah, he's like instant computation skills to, as far as like,
he's got a special
interpreting Sumerian writing.
He's got a decoder ring in his head.
Back at Ruby's, we see the aftermath of Kelly's Hail Mary grenade. Broken things are strewn all around, and this includes Ruby and Kelly. Kelly laughs and stops when she sees Ruby's hand creeping to reunite with her body. Ruby attempts recruiting Kelly. Kelly's not hearing it and wonders aloud, don't you ever shut the fuck up? Ruby, now recombined and brandishing the Kandarian dagger, says, last chance, Kelly. Leave now and I might let you live. Kelly says, fuck that. She wants her revenge and she isn't leaving until she gets hers. It's gladiator time, bitch. Ruby responds with, works for me.
That whole scene is so great for so many reasons. The first one being the inventiveness of Ruby's body crawling back to the main part of her body to reassemble and reattach itself, because you've got touches of Ash's evil hand from Evil Dead 2. And it's just good, gory inventiveness. And it was fun to watch. And then the reference to gladiators is awesome.
Yeah, of course, because of Spartacus.
So, you know, they needed to be at the, what was it, the Saturnalia?
And Lucretia, who Lucy Lawless played, was a formidable, tenacious bitch, too.
It looks like this version has been training in the ludus, and not just in the sexy time way.
Yeah, not just in the sexy time way. We're in the Cyberdyne way.
Cyberdyne. Sexy time, Cyberdyne. It's all the same. It's really all the same. That would have been just as good of a quote for either of us, too. It's gladiator time.
Yeah. Back in the hardware store cellar, Pablo opens the rift. Ash, concerned and annoyed, puts the ixnay on that development, for the time being anyway. Zoe and her knights gear up, readying to enter the rift. Ash argues why he shouldn't be used as a Hail Mary pass, being he is the only prophesied one they got. Marcus offers to go in alone as reconnaissance. Zoe thinks it's a great idea. Man, these guys are so green. Dalton was more tolerable than these guys.
There's no way I would go in there. There's no fucking way. I mean, if everybody was going, sure, but I'm not going to be the one to jump. I mean, it could be like a, you don't know what's on the other side. You could just fall forever, you know, like, oh, there you go. See ya. You're dead.
Yeah, the naivety wafts off them like stinky cheese. Pablo opens the rift and Marcus walks towards the rift and is pulled in by it. He is soon thrown back onto the cellar floor. Meanwhile, gladiator time is on. Kelly is fighting Ruby with a broken spear-like piece of furniture while Ruby wields the dagger. Ruby grabs Kelly by the throat and pins her to the wall. She peers at Kelly as Kelly struggles and seemingly regretful over wasted potential. Kelly stabs Ruby in the neck with a pencil. Ruby pulls this pencil out of her neck, and then Kelly lunges towards Ruby, finding herself on top of Ruby and impaled by the Kandarian dagger that Ruby has thrust into her belly. Ruby asks Kelly if it hurts. She pushes Kelly off of her onto the floor. Standing over her, she tells Kelly that she hated her least of all. We see the life leave Kelly and her blood seep out darkly onto the floor. First time I watched this, I was like, seriously? I'm so mad. But I knew underneath that this can't be the end for Kelly. Not really. Because Pablo died last season.
Mm-hmm.
And he's back.
Yeah, that's the one thing. Nobody dies for good in this, except for Brock. And about 10 other people I could list. But, you know, none of the main characters.
He's died more than once?
Yeah.
Or, well.
Yeah, you could say that. I guess what I'm saying is the three amigos, the three stooges, as it were, I don't think any of them are going to die for real until the very end, if even then.
Back in the cellar, Pablo senses something is terribly wrong. Arguably, what Pablo sensed was Kelly's death, maybe even her entering the rift. Ash senses something is wrong too, but his focus is on the dead land regurgitated Marcus. I've got a seriously demon vibe from this Joker. That's what he says. Peter helps Marcus up and soon finds himself being incorporated. Peter's morph into Marcus's deadite appendage slash accessory is lightning fast, and Ash and company find themselves facing an already formidable foe. Marcus vomits black blood onto Zoe's face and then attacks Paul, fashioning his head into a weapon worthy of a Deadland gladiator arena. Maybe because this writer was a co-producer on Spartacus, we're getting all this Spartacus stuff, gladiator stuff.
This guy is like the Deadite Theocles.
Yeah.
You just can't, you know, it's going to take a couple of people to beat him. The creativity shown in the effects that went into this zombie was apparent right when you watch it. But then in the little after episode interview that they have with Tappert every episode, and he talks about how much effort went into that because they couldn't quite get the shots the way they wanted them to. And so they had to patch everything together through, you know, sounds of things happening that were off screen, and a little bit of CGI, a little bit of practical effects, and a whole lot of editing. And kudos to them for doing it, because what they were trying to do with, I mean, nowadays, if you're going to go completely CGI, it's going to look a little bit fake, but you can get all of the craziness in there. But if you want to keep it real and keep that just that edge of reality, because you can always sense it, you know, the human mind can still sense that. So I like what they did.
And I just want to say, if any of you haven't seen Spartacus, you should watch it. It's one of the best shows I've ever seen, and it has the best series finale ever. Pablo and Ash attack the Marcus Deadite. Marcus has Ash pinned up against the wall and growls, "Join us." Ash says, "No, I'm good. I joined the Elks." That was almost my Metal Mike quote. At Ruby's, and with Kelly lying dead on the floor, Ruby picks up the Necronomicon. As we predicted, Kelly is going to serve as the vessel for Ruby's bae, Kaya.
Did you see Kelly's shirt, what it said?
Never look back?
Yeah, with the Kandarian dagger sticking out of it. Mm. Mm. She'll be back.
Apparently Kelly dying by the dagger's blade was important preparation for this ritual.
Yeah, because she mentions it. She says she died by the dagger and she has darkness inside her. So that had to happen that way. Otherwise, so she couldn't just pull somebody off the street, I guess.
Maybe there has to be an exchange. And so Kelly going into the Deadlands was necessary, and that dagger ensured that.
Oh, I like that.
Kelly's body sits up, but she speaks with Kaya's voice.
That was really well done.
Yeah, I was like, is Dana De Lorenzo doing that? Or is she lip-syncing really well to somebody else's voice?
It wasn't until the second watch that I got it that they're just putting her voice over it. Then they go back to Kelly's voice because she has to be able to convince people that she's Kelly.
Ruby plans to use Kaya to drive Brandy over the edge as a way to where they don't actually have to physically close that rift, because they're worried about the Dark Ones as well.
Right. If the Dark Ones come through that rift, they're both screwed. All of humanity is screwed, but they are too. They're not going to be able to escape that.
Back in Cellar Hell, the fight continues to bring down the Deadite Marcus. Ash is getting his ass handed to him, so Pablo attempts aid with the chainsaw. He manages to sever an appendage from Marcus before he gets the blade of the chainsaw stuck on a ceiling beam. Ash reunites with his chainsaw, and he announces to Marcus, "Time to suck a little saw." Ash lunges and slices towards the Deadite, but he still needs help. Pablo and Zoe begin firing, and then Ash saws the Deadite's head in half. And that is how you kill a demon. It's not as easy as it looks. Zoe cries about her fallen knights. "Welcome to my world, lady," Ash says. Pablo says, "Shit just got really weird," and he fears there are more demons waiting to come through the rift. Ash tells Zoe to hold on to the pages, and he asks Pablo to find a way to shut down that demonic poop chute once and for all. Ash needs to get home to his lovely daughter.
Demonic poop chute. All right, so where we're at right now is that...
So maybe that's the image that we've seen on the advertisement, like that poster advertisement for the show. Maybe that is actually the rift. Because it's swallow your soul. So
you'd actually be going into the mouth of a huge
Deadite.
Or maybe
it'll kind of like morph into that or something. I don't know.
It seems like it would be the boss Deadite that you fight at the end of it.
Because based on what we saw in the preview, what Ruby's cooking is not that.
No, it isn't.
Yeah.
Huh. So you're right. Well, it seems like you'd be right that it would have something more to do with the rift than it would to Ruby's little baby Ash Dark One.
Or it's just something enormous that comes out of the rift. Yeah.
It's a really big, big bat.
There's always a bigger fish. Ash arrives home to find Brandy home and Kelly. When Brandy leaves the room to go and make Ash some more Pop-Tarts, he turns to see Kelly holding the dagger. He doesn't register her malicious body language and says, "Son of a bitch, you found it. Good work, Kelly. This changes everything." Kelly responds to herself as he exits the room, Yes, it does. End of episode.
Okay, so let's talk about the next week on.
Okay.
There's going to be two Ashes. So we're going to get the out of the cocoon chrysalis thing comes a full-grown
Ash.
Evil Ash. And you see a scene at what looks to be Brandy's prom.
Or homecoming.
Or homecoming or something like that. And the evil Ash is killing people indiscriminately, it looks like, just slicing through people with the chainsaw. So all this is going to be a bid to get Brandy to think that Ash is crazy. Because I'm not sure if it's been stated explicitly, but I feel like Ruby needs Brandy to kill Ash. And then I guess it has been stated explicitly because she says by his own blood, killed by his own blood.
Does she mean when she says pushing Brandy over the edge, does she mean like psychologically or does she mean actually the ledge of the rift?
I think psychologically.
Because maybe she's what's needed to close that rift.
It could be a duality thing. It could be both of those.
Yeah.
But I do believe that this is why Ruby doesn't kill Ash. That, you know, when he says a couple episodes ago where he was like, she could have killed me anytime she wanted to. She knew that she had to have his offspring do it, somebody of his own blood. And now that, you know, Brock is dead, and now that, Cheryl's been dead for a while, then that's the only person that's left.
Yeah, but she could have grabbed Brandy any time during her youth.
But she didn't know.
Yeah, I know. That's what's confusing, because she had these pictures, and only of that particular coupling that Ash had, and not any others. So it's like she had narrowed it down right at conception.
Yeah, it is kind of convenient.
Unless she's just super neat and tidy, and once she, you know, figured out who was the actual progeny, she just threw out the rest of the pictures that she'd been, you know.
Yeah, because she doesn't want a bunch of pictures of Ash getting it on with people because she's grossed out by it. She's just, I can see Lucy Lawless just being like, ugh.
I can finally get rid of these. I mean, she can really get rid of that set too, but
yeah, she doesn't need that to be around. We needed to see it, but now that we've seen it, she can get rid of it, I'm sure.
So we've got four more episodes left.
Yep, one more month.
Yep.
And that may well be the end of it all, so we'll see.
Yeah, get your friends watching. We're trying.
Yeah, we talk to everybody we can about it, but I mean, it's so hard to get people to watch shows, and I understand that because people try to get us to watch shows, and it took Metal Mike sending us the physical copies of the DVDs of Hannibal for us to do it, but we did it. But by the time we're able to do that with people, it'll be too late.
I've had a couple people contact us and say how they're trying to catch up. They're in like season two or whatever. I just got one today, and I had one a couple weeks ago where somebody said that as well. So people are trying to catch up and be a part of it.
Good, good. Keep it going. This is an awesome, awesome show. It's going to be one of those things to where when it's over, if it doesn't come back, it's going to just gain more and more of a cult following. And then, but you know, with you know, it was kind of talked about in a meta way in this episode. Ash, you know, Bruce Campbell's not getting any younger. So 5-6 years from now, he might not be down to do a season four if there isn't one next year, is all I'm saying. That's fine. So anyway, let's go to feedback.
All right. Before we head into feedback, we'd like to ask you to go to iTunes and write us a review. If you're interested in checking out other things that we cover, you can go to our website at www.noship.net. Okay. All right. So now we are heading into feedback. First up, we have Scott, and he says, he actually gave this episode 10 out of 10 chainsaws.
Wow.
He says, where did Ash hear about Dalton's possession and death? Kelly knew, but she didn't tell Brandy, did she? And the dagger in the back for the last person to read the pages, is that, he's wondering if that's an Anobi Evil Dead 2 reference.
Yeah, it might just be. And if that's the case, then that's two references to Dead by Dawn.
Yeah, because I was perplexed when he said that, because I was like, who did that happen to in this show?
I didn't even think of her. I didn't even think of Annie. I just thought of her dad in the flashback or the rewriting of history in last season. But I don't think that's how he died anyway. But she did get a Kandarian dagger in the back.
Scott says, by the way, Kelly, bad plan. Ash didn't even tell Brandy he was gone. I like this much more serious tone this season has for what is probably the final season. Those nights didn't last long. It was a bad plan. I agree with that, but she did it with style.
Yeah, she did give much respect to Kelly for doing that.
Scott says, so I like this episode. It wasn't quite adrenaline pumping as some of the previous episodes, but it was an excellent piece of the season story arc and the long-running story of Evil Dead from the beginning. The Kelly/Ruby fight was the most excellent fight in the series. It was mostly serious, with tiny bit of humor and sad and emotional at the end. Love the quality of this season and hope there is a fourth season. Great new demon with a circus freak demon.
Yeah, everybody's a fan of that.
Yeah, it's good that everybody's a fan of that because it sounds like it took quite a bit to pull it off. So,
thank you, Scott.
Yes, thank you, Scott.
All right, second piece of feedback is from Metal Mike, and he says, "What is up, you Deadite Falcons? The fight between Kelly and Ruby was superb, even though Kelly is an idiot for going in it at it alone and for tossing the shotgun. Hindsight would have said, shoot Ruby's arms off, then go for the stab, but then there would be no fight, so I guess I'm good with it." Yeah, that is a good point. It would have been better just shoot her in the head like 5 times, and then while her head is regrouping, just start stabbing her in the torso randomly with the Kandarian dagger. That probably would have done it. Also, props to the stunt double who took the third shotgun blast down the stairs because that looked like it fucking hurt.
Yeah, it did.
That was really good stunt doubling, I guess. Stunt work. It sucked watching Kelly perish, but it allowed Dana to finally join her fellow actors by having a death on screen. I was rewatching episodes from season 1 and 2 with a friend last week and joked about how she was the only one who hasn't died yet. Foot and mouth for sure. Fingers crossed they find her in the rift or whatever the place is that contains the people who have been turned, if that's really how it works. I think it is, because that's why Rachel's in there, or they saw Rachel, to kind of let us know, like, okay, people who have been killed at least somewhat recently can still be in there. I mean, I don't know if Chet's hanging out or...
Yeah, I mean, we've been speculating that, so yeah. Hopefully we'll see him.
I absolutely loved the, quote, creature that came back out of the rift. It gave me some old but serious Resident Evil video game vibes. I've never played that game, but I've seen images of it before, and I think I know what you're talking about. I've seen stuff that seems like that, because it's kind of a shoot 'em up, right? It's a first-person shooter, or at least the early ones were, where you have to find your way out of a bunch of zombies.
Didn't I have a Todd McFarlane Resident Evil toy?
I think you did, or do.
Yeah,
I do. I still have them in the garage.
I got it because it reminded me of the singer, but...
What singer was that?
Peter Murphy.
Oh, okay. All right.
It makes no sense, but it did to me at the time. But anyway.
Anyway, Mike goes on to say, "It was nice seeing Ash and Brandy bond, but it feels weird seeing people happy in this show. The preview for next week might turn that around." Yeah. My Metal Mike quote of the week goes to Ash with, "I'm 50-something years old. Why don't you move on without me?" Not sure if that line was put in intentionally, but I think we've all said, or at least thought, that this show could live on without Ash in some way. Not sure how it would work, but Kelly and Pablo have easily earned my respect enough to see them continue on in some form. Metal Mike from New Hampshire, dig it.
Dig it, Mike.
Yeah.
I dig your feedback. Yeah, I could see that, like, there being a series with Kelly and Pablo and Ash showing up.
Periodically.
Force ghosts, like Brock.
A drunk force ghost.
Yeah. And then Bruce Campbell doesn't have to do the stunts anymore because he's a ghost dummy. He can't help.
And, you know, he would have his real hand back. And so then he'd be able to have 2 beers. Remember, that was the big deal.
He wouldn't be able to drink them, though.
No. Well, if they were ghost beers. But anyway, yeah, we've speculated on that before, too, about how going forward, if this show doesn't last... And then they come up with another. I don't see how they'd really be able to pitch a sideshow to a show that got canceled. But that's another story, I guess. But I think I speak for both of us when I say that we would definitely watch something with Pablo and Kelly in it.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it.
We'd cover it, too.
Yeah, we would. All right, so that covers it. That's our coverage of this episode. So stay tuned. Next week, same Evil Dead time, same Deadite channel, as it were.
Yeah, Evil Dead hour.
Evil Dead hour. All right, so now it's time for Steve's horror movie pick of the week. We have an interesting one this week. It is Return of the Living Dead. This is the first zombie movie that I ever saw. It's the first horror movie that I ever saw when I was about 10 or 11 years old. I want to say I was 11. And I didn't know some of this stuff. I just thought it was a cool gory yet funny, but still pretty scary zombie movie that came out. And I saw that and I got into George A. Romero's classic masterworks later on. But when I did a little bit of research, the handy Wikipedia tells me that this series came about as a dispute between John A. Russo and George A. Romero over how to handle the sequels to their 1968 film, Night of the Living Dead. The two reached a settlement wherein Romero's sequels would be referred to as the Dead movies and Russo's sequels would bear the suffix Living Dead. Thus, each man was able to do what he pleased with the series while still having one author's work distinct and considered canon. Following this decision, Russo wrote a horror novel, Return of the Living Dead, which he planned on adapting into a film script. Although the film rights were initially sold in 1979, they were passed along by several different studios and directors before finally being obtained by Toby Hooper, for whom Russo wrote a script. Hooper dropped out of the project, though, and the script never came to fruition. You'll remember Toby Hooper is the one who did Texas Chainsaw Massacre, eventually. So following Hooper's departure from the project, Russo, along with his new partner Dan O'Bannon, wrote a new script, with Russo adapting it into an accompanying novel, also titled Return of the Living Dead. The project alleviated confusion by including a scene in which a character acknowledges the George Romero films and explains that while they are based on true events, the events of the Return series are the, quote, true story. In addition to the separation of the storylines, the films in the Return series are markedly more comedic than Romero's films with slapstick humor. You remember that scene, Em, when the guy's talking to the new hire at the place where they keep all the...
The morgue?
It's not the morgue. The morgue's across the street, but it's like the science place where they've got frozen dead bodies, and it's like a medical warehouse. And he's like, "I've got these canisters downstairs." He's like, "What do you got?" And he's like, "Remember that movie, Night of the Living Dead? Well, it's kind of based on a true story, but they kind of changed it around so the public wouldn't get hip to it." And he starts talking about how it's a typical army fuck up and everything. And then they have the canisters down there that the story was supposed to be based off of. And he's like, "Oh, these things won't leak. This is Army Corps of Engineers." And he kicks it and the gas comes out and the movie starts.
That's the one where their blood starts pooling, right? On their bodies.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's how they realize that they're dead.
And the classic one with brains.
Yeah.
So if you've ever known anybody who said that phrase and didn't know where it was from Return of the Living Dead. Also, send more cops.
He says it into the radio.
Yeah, zombies talking. There's also another one, send more paramedics. And then they nuke it at the end, even though they're sequels.
The one with Send More Paramedics, the one that Bobby Briggs is in?
No, it's the same one.
Oh, it's
Bobby
the same
Briggs
one.
Is in the second movie.
Okay.
Dana Ashbrook plays a character in the Return of the Living Dead Part 2.
Okay.
And there's Part 2, Part 3, I think there's 4 and 5 as well, and they're filmed in the Ukraine or Russia. And but anyway, one of the better zombie movies to come out in the 80s. So if you've seen any of the Romero's or any of his remakes and you dug it, if you're a fan of The Walking Dead and you haven't really gotten to the movie stuff yet, check this one out. You will not be disappointed. Get some soda and popcorn and have a grand old time. And thank you for listening to Deadite Bites. I'm your host, Steve.
And I'm your host, Em.
Sleep tight.
Don't let the deadites bite.
Like a boss.